Welcome to Let's Get Writing Season 6. I'm your host and producer, Catherine Taylor. For all my content, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at Catherine Taylor TV. Now, welcome to the show. Let's Get Writing tells you the stories behind the stories and introduces you to the writers who create the books that you enjoy. And today's guest is no exception. He was born in Windsor, Newfoundland to a blue-collar family in a one-industry town. And I know intimately about that because I'm from the same area. I grew up in Grand Falls. Back in the day, they were Grand Falls and Windsor. Today, they're Grand Falls, Windsor, Newfoundland, and Labrador. A bit of an amalgamation. Now, my guest's unique path through life led him to success as a self-made millionaire. And he's sharing his story in the recently published memoir with Flanker Press, Seventh Son, My Road to Success. Please welcome Jim Scott to Let's Get Writing. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hi, Catherine. Great. Thanks. Thanks very much for having me on your show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Yeah, it's a pleasure. You've been creating a lot of buzz around the province, and you were even recently here in town for a book signing. How was it to be back in your old stomping ground telling your success story?
It was surreal. It was nice to get back to see old friends and family I haven't seen for a while. I try to get back at least twice a year. But in this occasion, I saw people I'd never seen for such a long time. And that was like exhilarating, and it was a lot of fun. And it was a nice time to see everybody.
Well, when I read your book, you said at one point one of your goals in life was to write a book. You'd accomplished a lot of things, but you wanted to write a book and share. And you've done it. I want to talk to you a bit about that process. And how did that idea get started for you? When did that land?
Well, a few years ago, of course, I've got like a lot of people that worked for me over the years. And I guess through my own journey in life, they got to know me a bit better for working with me. And I, were colleagues before I started my company, and then they joined me. And as the time went by, and some of my brothers even come on board with me, and they all started to share with me, say, like, you've had such good experiences, inside and outside of Canada. And they said, you tell a lot of good stories. You should write something about it. And it was sort of a seed that was planted, probably around 10 or 15 years ago. And I just thought, when I retired, I thought, I never forgot it. And I thought, yeah, I could probably do that. And the initial thought was just to do that. And I thought, I'm going to make it. So my family and friends, sort of a giveaway thing. And, because they were, like encouraging so much. So that's how it started. And when I got Nenner involved to actually put it together so it looked like a book, Carolyn Chafee Parsons was, was a great meet for me in getting her acquaintance and getting her on board. And basically it went from there. And when it got completed, she actually encouraged me to show it to the publishers, which I was delighted and didn't think was, sometimes you write about yourself, you wonder, okay, it's a good or bad. I never wrote anything. And so when we hit the Flanker, I was delightfully surprised that they wanted to publish. And it went from there, and it seems to have gotten a life of its own. So
I think you probably felt what a lot of people feel, and I know that I felt writing my first book, how do you do it and how do you begin? And I'm telling you, you went to a great person with Carolyn, who's actually a distant cousin of mine. So I think writing runs in our family. And I met her through an event that I was working on. But so when you went to Carolyn, and a lot of people will say, Jim, I want to write my life story. I want to write a memoir. But a lot of those books remain in drawers, maybe in exercise books, but they never see the light of day. So did you feel like it was a bit of a mountain to climb and that you didn't quite know where to start, or how did it start?
Well, initially I started off, I felt that I would write a chronological history of from my beginnings to now, present. And at that time I just retired. And I thought, well, I know I'm really good at dates. I'm really good. My memory is great. And like I've got great, like detail perception and stuff like that. But anyway, and that's how it started out. Now, when I first wrote it, it was a very short manuscript, and I got a couple of friends involved, and they read it and they said, well, Jim, it's not really you because it's more mechanical. it was like, you know, A to B to C to D, you know, whatever. So from that, when I got Carolyn involved, she actually did something, you know, so simple but effective. And she basically talked about, you know, got to know me a bit. And she said, I'm going to send you a document, basically. And I sent it as a Google document. And it came in, and I opened it up. And basically, my book was in the middle, chapters to the left. On the right, she just basically, I want you to tell me stories. And she picked out an arrow, pointed to a sentence or a paragraph. Give me a story, 1,000 words. Give me a paragraph about this subject, you know. And basically, I just started telling stories. And I was delighted how, you know, when she, that, you know, that guidance really put me on the path to where this all ended up. And I knew I could tell stories. And she, from the few conversations we had initially, she felt, yeah, you can tell a lot of good stories. So I was telling her bits and pieces of my life and well, how I got her and all that. She was like, she was really encouraged by that. So she really got me to a space where it actually looked like a book. And then there were some, you know, the editing got involved. She's got a couple for colleagues to help her with the, you know, the formatting of the book. And then, of course, when I went to Flanker, they rearranged a small bit. They talked about changing some chapter names that would, you know, really connect with the viewer of the book, which, and they tastefully done it. There were chapters I had at the beginning, which moved to the end. And if you read the book, you know, it's so, well, just one paragraph, like one, just last, you know, chapter really pulled up everything together. It was so tastefully done. I was like, oh, but it truly was my story. And, you know, there was editing helps and all that. But basically, it's the stories that I felt that needed to be told that would sort of give people understanding where I was, where I led to my journey, and to where I ended up. And it's so ironic, people today, that strangers really tell me a lot of good stories. But when family and friends read it, they say, I didn't know this about you at the end. And the other people at the end will say, I didn't know about it at the beginning. So it was, you know, it was interesting to hear. And yes, to segue into your comment about, I did get a lot of people say, oh, I want to write a book. And there's actually people told me about, they got a lot of stuff pulled together and wanted me to meet with me after this to say, look, can you help me? And I, you know, raised my hand. I said, hey, you've got to call Carolyn right away.
Call the expert on the writing, you know, but it's true. You've hit upon something, Jim, and it engaged me with the book as well. It's the stories. You take us back to that time of growing up and the things you went through in your life. And I don't know, you do have a good memory. You covered a lot in there, but you brought us into it. And I think, as with anything, even if it's a memoir, we're there for the stories, and you have that there in spades. It's really a great read. And so, did you have any anxiety over the telling of your story? Or, you know, did you ever doubt that perhaps, well, you know, what are people going to think, or this needs to be told? Where was your head?
Well, those moments are there for you. And I think writing about yourself, I learned now that it's not easy, but I didn't know how hard it was. And when I say that, I got a cousin that got a, you know, a master's in literature. And she said, Jim, it's not even on my bucket list. Do you realize how hard it is to do? And I said, you know, maybe that's why I didn't know it. And probably good I didn't know it, that I just went into that journey and I thought, well, I could tell stories, and I knew it. But, and we talked, like, I remember Carolyn telling me exactly, we talked about detail. She said, Jim, nobody writes a book with exact dates. How do you remember exact dates? And I said, for me, it's always been the correlation of something that happened during that period of my life, like my father's death. I can always know that date and where I was to or what. So that's how I did it. But she actually made me take out the actual dates. Okay. And it made sense. But at the time, to me, I mean, I know. And like, there was, you know, lots of stories where people, like, you know, how do you remember the month? Again, it's about correlation. But mm-hmm. Some research done. Like, I asked a lot of my family friends about the stories. Does this make sense when I told it? And like, I actually sat with an attorney and we had talked around the subject, what if? And what if was, you know, what if I said something wrong? And, you know, she said to me, first, make sure it's true. Make sure it's positive. Don't, like, you know, make anybody out to something or not, but it is your memory. But at the end of the day, she said, you know, like, do it freely, knowing that, be truthful to yourself and to the people where you go. No, I never forgot that. Mm-hmm. That's anyway, I'm not a type of person who ever, if I can't help you, you know, I'm not going to hurt you. That's not who I am.
Yeah, I get that about you. You weren't good. It's interesting that you mentioned the attorney, because you don't want to make any mistakes like Harry did with the book Spare. You know, you say something and you're thinking, okay, who have I offended, or what have I opened up here? But then that's something that I hadn't thought of. A very good idea, good piece of advice. And what other kind of advice would you have for anyone starting out to do something like this?
I think if I was to say to anybody out there that hadn't thought about writing a book, just start doing it. I mean, the beautiful thing about technology today and a computer is, you know, a prime example, you can write a book on a computer, put and shut it, like save it, shut it down, leave it for a while, break just a little bit. It don't take long. And after a while, you realize I'm pulling something together. But once you do that and you've got the foundation built, like of a house, you build a foundation first, well, guess what? The Carolyn Chappie parts of the world will come in and help put the house on top of the foundation. And I think that's the way. It's about building blocks. It's about a process. Don't go thinking, oh, I got to do this. And my initial doubt was 6 months. Oh, I was online. That, don't think in terms of time. Just think in terms of, I want to get this much out, and then with some help on the outside. But make sure you check the stories, because maybe sometimes you're telling a story, whether it's about yourself or something that you're writing about, you need to fact check. And that's something I learned too, that go and ask people that was involved in that period, and they will give you their feedback and say, oh yeah, right, I forgot about that, or add something to it. You know, that, like, again, it's your memories if you're doing what I did, an autobiography, but again, it's more of a memoir, like it's my memories.
Mm-hmm. So
if I say something that I thought was right in the book and somebody didn't, well, it's still more memories, as long as it wasn't negative or just right out of the launch. But you need to do something in terms of fact-checking. So
mm-hmm.
I think you do. But just do a piece at a time, and you'll be surprised how fast something will come together. And when it does, you'll say, wow, I got something. Now what do I do? Well, that's when you need an editor. When you do that, it changes everything.
Mm-hmm. And you said you expected to do it in 6 months. How long did it take you?
It took 2 years from the time I started.
Right,
and it said the same thing, is that, yeah, it should have took you, and probably longer, because when you read, they say, when you read a lot of it usually takes a lot longer. And I didn't know that, and I didn't think that. Well, I just thought, I can do this, but, you know, maybe it's just my determination of who I am, and if you read the book, you'll understand my determination that when I want to do something, I do it. Like, you know, when I put my, you know, I go in 100%, and I want to do it. And if I don't know something about it, I'm going to go see someone that did it, or so I can guide me and go on the next step. And here's a good example. This is a segue, but probably put it in real life. I've learned how to play golf. Like, I played golf when I was a hacker, and learned from a lot of friends here lately. I've changed my games just getting a little bit of coaching, a little bit of mentoring. But guess what? You learn it, and guess what? You get better, you get better. But you got to do it repetitiously. And I think that's where the book went in terms of writing chronologically, and all of a sudden adding stories and reformatting and changing things around that makes sense. And then the flow of the book. And that be done by the flankers of the world. And like I said, the editors.
And it is an interesting process, but it's like molding something. But if you have nothing to work with, you have nothing to work with. So it's to get, we always say, get anything down on paper. Even if it's a bad writing day, you have something down. At some point, you can rework it or move it through to another chapter.
Well, that was just a little interesting subject. One of the families I wrote with, the Tubbers, and there's one of the oldest sister shared with me recently after reading my book. She said, I have everything wrote down over here, dated on sheets of paper, and she's 74 years old, about her family, all the events of her family. There's a family, 25 people. And I said, look, if you want help with that, I can get in and get you to the right people. And but it's a book in itself. Imagine being born and growing up with 25 children. And she's got dates and all. I mean, that's, to me, the foundation of a book.
Sure. Sure it is. And it's amazing, the big families. Like, you're alone, your family, reading about your family in the book was interesting to keep it straight.
It is.
And growing up. So what... You know, you had that meeting when you were very young with Martin, where that seed was planted about the seventh son, and you chose that for the title of the book. Can you talk a little bit about that? What has that meant to you?
Well, initially, the book was about, like, I didn't know what to call it, and that's the other thing a lot of authors and I find it to say that now because, you know, I mean, here I am. But when you're writing a book, sometimes you're not sure about what I call it. And my initial thought was, you know, to journey to my success, just trying to, you know, and I had to bring something up there just to start. So I did that. Ironically, when Carolyn got involved, and it was only mentioned once that I was seventh son, and she said to me, "This is Eureka moment. Should you know?" And she hadn't called me. She was so excited. And she said, "Jim, I've checked and I can't find a book named The Seventh Son. Take the title." I said, "It'll be yours forever. And you know, you'll be the first." And they said, "Do you know how rare it is now to be a seventh son? Most families don't have big pimps." And I went, "Yeah, it was a great idea." But then she said, "Put the next part down below it, right? You know, my journey to success." So I was like, "Yeah, this." And that's basically where it started. But in terms of the seventh son and meeting Martin and stuff like that, it was one of those moments that I didn't talk about a lot, because sometimes people in the spiritual sense of humanity, either you're in it or you're not in it. And you know, like there's a quagmire when you talk about it, right? And for me, it was like, I felt odd in this own way, because I know things that I didn't want to share. And it almost felt a bit weird. I know that, for lack of a term. But for me, I was like, it was a sign of my life. I not suppressed, but I just didn't talk about it. And those experiences is what I talk about. And I'll never forget that period when, you know, Dad took me to meet her. And I was like, he told me stuff. And even today, there's times I'll have those deja vu moments. And I was like, it's scary. It was. But now I was like, unless it's something really profound, but most times it hits me here that I know he said these things to me. This will happen. Or he didn't give in like detail, but at the same time, that eureka moments are going to happen. And it does. And like I said, meeting like Juan, you know, seventh son of seventh son of seventh son. Like, I was floored. Yeah. Never thought that was a possibility. And I even checked it. I actually checked it in, you know, the Webster Dictionary. It says it's like 5 to 1 to a billion. Like, there's only 8 billion people in the world. So do the math. Mm-hmm. Whether that happens, so rare. And like, it's, you know, it's astonishing. But when you meet these people, and that episode of meeting Dom, not to give away the book too much, but you know, that handshake, like, I mean, it's profound. And again, I felt a bit weird just talking about it, you know. But it made sense after to segue into that as being the book, because it's a part of me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of people often said, my family says, "Oh, you're lucky. You're very lucky, you know." But at the same time, they'll say, "You're so determined, and you know, you're not letting nothing knock you down." And, you know, I have had a few knockdowns, but that same one is been picking yourself up.
As we say here, I was lucky I wasn't lazy. Right? Because this doesn't come out of thin air. So we've talked a lot about the writing of the book, but let's talk a little bit about your story. You were a young boy, grew up in Windsor, and I really enjoyed when you were telling those parts of the story as well, because it brought back memories of growing up in this small town. And we had a lot of things here in this town that small towns in Newfoundland didn't have. A lot of experiences. We had segregation too between two communities. We had a lot of things going on. But as a child and everything you went through as you grew up and you worked, did you see where you were going?
Initially, no, because I was really struggling at the very beginning. Like I said, I guess when I lost my dad, it was a spot in my life where I was really lost, and I didn't know what to do. And one of the things I talk about in the book is when I met, you know, what would be my future wife and her family, the Dwyer family from Winters. They were so influential on me in terms of, you know, their attitude towards education and, you know, how important it was. And, you know, that conversation with, you know, the matriarch, you know, with Mr. Dwyer, and it was so, you know, groundbreaking for me in its own way. And like, just those little conversations, you know, prior to having a supper up there, you know, on visits, you know, I was dating his daughter, Donna, and it was, you know, like, it was, it hit me. And like I said, it made me think a lot about where I needed to be. And, you know, because when you're going to school in middle school, something like that, like teacher will say, you know, it would say stuff like, you know, you could do anything. And, I guess I was a kid that never took a book home. And I guess I would catch on. And that's the reason why I think they said it. But they said other things. I mean, teachers see things in you you don't see yourself. And sometimes when you go to the pure wildlife show, well, that's my last festival, I had a bad chip on my shoulder. There was no, okay, we should take Jim and see somebody. There was none of that. Suck it up, move on. See, you know, and that's no reflection on, you know, our parents or, you know, the family. It was just, that's the state of period you're in. But in that respect, though, meeting the Dwarves, it meant so much. When I look back, like, wow, they really got me thinking differently. And then my thoughts went back up. I started to go back and my teacher said, wow, they were right. And I didn't see it. And, you know, I remember years later meeting this Mr. Bradbury. He stopped saying, I knew you'd do something. And he said to me, I thought you would be in university. You're university material. I didn't see it. I know it now. I know if I went to university now, I can take on anything. I know. That's not in, you know, like, that's not in bowl. That's just in, that's to me, I know what I can do.
Right? Mm-hmm. Well, back growing up at the time, this town was a one industry town. We had the paper mill. People could come out with very little education. They could, I think, leave school at grade 8 and get a well-paying job in the paper mill and be set for life. So there wasn't that same emphasis on education.
No.
In my experience in life, it was assumed you were going to go to university, but there were a lot of people who didn't. A lot of people who walked into really great jobs. I don't know, great always is hardworking, hard jobs at times, but they paid well, and they didn't have to go far from home for it. So it was a unique period, I think, in the life of our town and the province. And I think those of us who lived through it are the only ones that will probably ever truly understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were lucky because you think about where we grew up. We had like some of the highest paid jobs in the province outside. That would equate to back then there was no offshore. It was mining. And like to be, you know, a young man growing up in the 70s, most times you were going for a trade, but there was that element that went to university. And I had a lot of friends that did that. But we didn't, you know, for, you know, whatever reason, we just got into most of our brothers end up in the Air Forces or tradesmen. And that was just the path we were going to take. And now to choose which one. And I was the oddball, I guess. I chose something that nobody else in my family chose. Nobody. And they didn't understand why. But I think that still goes back to wanting to be initially appointed. And before that was one of my body mechanic. So, you know, my view was a trade. And the trade I picked, nobody else picked. And it was so ironic that I just broke out and went to the mining sector. And none of my brothers went to the mining sector. So you don't know where life is going to take you, right?
No, you don't know. But you have to have a general idea, a general thought that you want to get up. And you did get involved with real estate. You tried a lot of different things. And eventually, I think your consulting company was where it all landed, and you sold it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was a great experience. Like I said, at the time, I was going to hang on because, I mean, I was doing well. I had a lot of good employees. Things were going well from the mining sector, as I had thought. And all of a sudden, mining is very cyclical, up and down. That's just the way it goes. And that's all is a commodity. And then in the commodity world, it flows, you know, ebbs and flows. And at one of these, you know, times it just bottomed, and it was a hard time, and I could see the end coming for a lot of small companies and the opportunity. You know, I was basically, I guess part of that came from the service I was given, and they did not want to see my company fail. They wanted me to be involved somehow with the firm. And I think that's where, you know, again, not to give away too much, but you know, somebody stepped in and basically said, hey Jim, you should talk to somebody. And that's where it started to. But when it did, I was looking at, I got to save these 28 families because they might have ended up somewhere else. And generally you do. But at the same time, they like what they do. And if I could stay there and still be involved and still, you know, be that person in front of it, they like that idea and they want to stay aboard. So they were willing to jump with me. And they did. And like I said, it was a good move to move over to the engineering side and just, you know, for them to purchase new. And it was another big journey, right?
Mm-hmm. And you took a little bit of retirement, but you haven't fully retired. You're still doing some, which I think is the new retirement.
I really believe that. Like, you know, my father used to say, well, I was only a young guy. He'd say, like, he was having a lot of friends that were leaving the mill at 65, and some were leaving a little bit early because it was what they call a golden age. These guys, they were his buddies, and they were the last 6 months, they were fretting themselves because they were stressed because they didn't have nothing to do. They never went outside. And Dad used to always say, do something outside of work that you enjoy, either personally or volunteering or whatever. So that way you've got something to do when you retire. Just don't go home and sit down in front of the TV. He said, that's, you know, and I thought that was so interesting to hear that as a young guy. My father, who had retired, but he was doing it. He actually retired Mill Force down at 65 in 1970, just the way it was. He would really watch me and then turn around. He was working with Colt McCullough fixing, you know, carpentry, like the old cases and boxes. That, you know, and like he was doing stuff like that all on. I was like, wow, interesting. And when I retired, I thought, yeah, I'm going to do some golf and I was going to ride a pool, play some dots of where I want. And so quick as I went out, bang, I went back in. And, you know, and that far from the truth. When they say, you know, it's like being in the mob. You think you're out, no sir, draws you back in. Well, you know, and I don't know if it's a good analogy, but for me it was, because I'm still excited, delighted by the whole process that people are still calling me and say, hey, Jim, I need your help. I just got one call before this process here today, and they asked me, I need some help with some leasing of some building here in St. John's, and they know I can do a bit of everything, which is, I'm delighted that they're doing it. And it feels exciting for me to have something to do.
Well, I'm sure you're going to have something to do. This is going to initiate a lot of phone calls, people asking you questions. And I encourage people to read the story. It's a wonderful, wonderful look at a positive story. And I think I have to wrap, but I think you want to share that message with others as part of your vision, and also maybe another book in the works.
I'm third way into another book, and the other part I'm trying to look at now is motivational speaking to the high schools. I want to do that next. Some schools are now recently, and seeing I'm waiting for some back feedback so I can look at that. So, but listen, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
And it's a pleasure as well. And keep writing. I guess we'll have you back for another book when that comes up. And have fun on the rest of the journey, Jim.
It'll be my pleasure to come back, and thank you very much.
Everyone, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Get Writing, and I look forward to seeing you this season. And also, don't forget to subscribe on my YouTube channel at Catherine Taylor TV. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.